Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the third ever episode of the Film Fund podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Verity, founder and executive producer at the Film Fund. We're an online film funding platform that is an alternative to screenwriting contests, grant submissions, crowdfunding campaigns. Those things are all awesome, but we wanted to simplify the process a little bit for film funding for short films and music videos. You write one sentence pitching what your film is about and how you'd use some of the funding to produce that film if you're chosen as a winner, and you can win up to $10,000 in funding as well as other prizes. So we currently have funding contests. We run contests all the time. We have an active contest period right now, deadline of December 8th. So be sure to check that out if you're listening at a later date. Like I said, we're always running contests. So be sure to go to thefilmfund.co/contests for the most up-to-date information. Today we have the amazing cast and some crew of Sunday Dinner, one of our more recent short films that's currently on the virtual festival circuit. Thank you, COVID. We have Don Finelli, writer, producer, actor, Kevin Mead, director, Darren Miller, producer, Nate Vaughn, producer. And instead of listening to me ramble on, I am just going to let them all kind of introduce themselves. And, you know, we'll make this episode explicit. It's going to be a little bit of a clusterfuck, but whatever. We're just going to, I'll hit the checkbox. We're going to mark it.
Yeah.
So, Don, you're first on my list.
That's good.
If you want to start it off, guys.
So quiet down now.
Make sure you say the F word.
Yeah.
So that we justify that explicit.
Don't fuck this up, Don.
Yeah. Finelli. You need an F per minute.
Yes. My name's Don Finelli. I'm an actor, writer, and I did a little producing in this one too. And been doing this for about 10 years now. I started with the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. That's how I met a lot of these guys in New York City. Moved out to Los Angeles a couple of years ago. I've done TV shows that you've probably seen, but probably did not know I was in them. And
like what? Name drop.
One or two. Orange is the New Black, Broad City, 30 Rock, Superstore, you know. And I was in a show called Nightcap on Pop TV, so where I got to improvise a lot of celebrities, and that was a whole lot of fun. So, but I'm also a writer, you know, do some screenplays here and there.
Awesome.
I've never heard of any of those shows.
Yeah, no. Well, that's sad as a director.
Yeah, what's
Kevin.
What's Pop TV?
I don't. That's fair. That's fair. Shout out Schitt's Creek.
Kevin, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. I'm Kevin Mead. Thank you for having me. I directed Sunday Dinner, the short film, and it was a great time. Similar-ish trajectory to Don, save the actual name recognizable television shows. Moved out to LA about 7 years ago. Before that, I was in New York. I was born and raised in New York and then went to college with Darren, actually, which you'll probably hear a little bit more about, where we were in a comedy group, we did sketch and improv and started, basically taught ourselves how to do video, and that's sort of where I got my filmmaking start. And then, after about 7 years ago, I moved out to LA, went to graduate film school, and then have just been hustling, directing, editing mostly ever since. And I've done did a permanent stint at Funny or Die. I've done college humor stuff. I directed a streaming series for Full Screen, and I'm working on my first feature right now.
Very cool. Darren, you want to take it from there?
Yes. I'm Darren.
I'm going to say cool a lot because I'm not a good host. I'll just say very cool, and I have no one.
Oh, that's. I was just doing that. Me. That's cool. Was I making fun of you?
Accidentally? No, maybe. I don't know.
I'm Darren Miller. I'm Darren Miller. I am a producer and writer. I did comedy back in DC where Kevin and I went to school together and met there, and then moved to New York and did comedy at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York with Kevin and met Don there as well. Then moved out to LA with very similar stories about 6 years ago, and I've been working at Funny or Die since the day I moved here, actually. And I've done a number of different things there, writing, producing, programming work, and currently run programming of the like short form digital team there. And then make short films like this with friends. What else? I think that's all I got.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely want to dive into the Funnier Die stuff later, sure, since you guys are both involved in that for sure.
Bring it on home. In case the audience can see the video as well and not just the audio, my name is Nate. I have not had a haircut since March Vaughn. I came on late to this as a producer, and I knew Darren actually as well through Funny or Die. We'd worked together, and I guess Kevin too. Technically, Kevin and I met in the office briefly. We were going to work together. He was doing some editing stuff. Yes, I kind of came on as to push it over the finish line, to add some momentum and a little extra energy to this.
Nate's the only one with any actual that's skills. That's why he came on.
The soup had been made. I just came on to sprinkle the garnish, as it were.
What exactly did you
do? The recipe had been made.
Yeah, the meatballs had been made, but I added the garnish. Okay. I continued to work for Funny or Die for a while, but then sort of moved into freelance production after that, mostly commercials and music videos, and a little creative stuff here and there on the side. But recently during COVID, I've been a volunteer firefighter and an EMT since college. So it's been a
let's just talk about that.
You didn't know that, Kevin?
That's not fuck our film, man.
Get amazing. Rid of all my film funding questions. Yeah.
I told you he has actual skills.
That was your credit on Sunday dinner.
Yeah, it's EMT. Down there at the bottom, with all the logos.
He did put out all the fires.
Metaphor. Wait, Nate, were you volunteer firefighting during COVID? That's
what you're saying? Well, so yeah, it's been tricky with that, actually, like the volunteer aspect of that, like with the actual fire department, because there's a liability thing that's cropped up.
Right.
But I've actually had the opportunity to go in to. I thought it would be useful in this environment to have everybody keep working and have and kind of keep the momentum going. So I've been actually a set medic on different shows.
Cool. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Get it back to film.
Just, there you go. There's the I figured cool. That would be the most help I could do right now. So sort of spinning my wheels doing that for a while. Mm.
Nice. So it sounds like some of you guys met in college, then through Funny or Die. Don, how did you get involved with everybody again? How did this project come together?
It was probably through Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. That's how I really met Darren.
Okay. But,
Darren, we didn't really know each other that. I mean, we hung out, we knew each other through the UCB, but we were on kind of in different areas of UCB as it started getting bigger.
Yeah.
Because I think I was off of the sketch groups are called Mod Night there. You were...
I was too, but later.
Yeah, you were on later than I was. I think I was off by then. So we kind of, it was like ships passing in the night, but we knew of each other. And then I heard.
We almost did that show.
That's right.
We almost put together we came one step short of putting together a
silent
half hour long, fully silent sketch show that never happened.
Through UCB. Through UCB with cast member Mike Antonucci.
Oh, yeah, with Mike.
Yep.
Okay, so it all goes back to UCB.
Yeah, it all goes
back
to
some college people. Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. Well, I mean, obviously we loved Sunday Dinner at the Film Fund. All the judges thought it was hysterical. How did this idea come about? I guess, is this straight out of Don Finelli's dining room table?
Yeah.
Give me the inception.
Kind of. The inception of it, well, I was on, so UCB started these like video teams, and I was interested in short films at that point. So I was put on a short film team. So we made a couple, it was maybe like eight of us, and we made a couple of shorts, and there was like two directors, and they'd kind of go on and off. I made a short myself. It was really bad. It was about a hairy male stripper. And then the next thing I wrote, and this was like 7 years ago at this point, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, was Sunday Dinner. And that was bred out of like, every time I went home, I became sort of more of a prick to my parents because like they were buying like organic ingredients.
Right.
And they would,
was this from LA?
Yeah. Like
influence.
I don't think I was even out in LA at that. You know, I wasn't out in LA at this point. I think I was just like hell bent on living in Brooklyn, like down the block from a farmer's market, like just all high on my horse. But then also like, having, like my mom has MS and, you know, people around in my family are, you know, various times sick. And I'm like, well, it's in our genes here. So let's like maybe eat a little bit better. And I'm just kind of like a health freak at that point too. So it was just kind of like, oh, this is funny. If this, like, what if this, I was just trying to take it to the next level. Like, what if I came out as vegan while we're having like traditional Sunday? And in the Sunday, in the Italian culture, when I was growing up, Sunday dinner is very important.
Oh, it's sacred.
Very sacred. So, and sad when we got older, it kind of like went by the wayside a little bit with like the kind of bigger family, but it was always like a thing on our Sundays. Sure. It was like a slow cooked meal. Didn't always have to be meatballs and stuff like that. But for a while it was like with my dad's sisters. And so it was kind of a big thing. So that was it. It was just like this conflict between me and my parents. And then I was like, what if I just like came out and refused to eat this shit? Like what would actually go down?
Yeah. I guess before we get too far ahead, I mean, I'll read the pitch sentence that we released along with the, we had a blog post of why it was such a good pitch, but could you give us a brief synopsis or, you know, overview of the film?
Yeah. I mean, it's about an Italian American siblings kind of doing their traditional Sunday dinner right after their parents die. So they're trying to continue this Sunday dinner. And one of them, the character of Don, has a secret that kind of, threatens the whole thing. And I mean, I can go deeper with it, but he comes out as a vegan, and it just spirals everybody. They don't understand, and they think, and it's basically a brother against brother situation where it's the whole thing is based on tradition versus progression. That's what I always say. So it's like this battle between tradition versus progression. Where's that line? When is it, you know? It's a question I always kind of fight within myself and within my culture. So it was something I wanted to put to the forefront and explore.
Got it. Yeah, no, it's an awesome pitch. We'll read the exact sentence we got here. It is, an Italian-American man confesses to his passionate siblings that he is now vegan and refuses to eat their traditional Sunday meatballs. And I need $ for a DP and prod design. So production design. And we have an entire blog post that kind of dissects this pitch, if you want to check it out on our blog, how winner Don Finelli created conflict in his movie pitch. It just goes on to say that that one sentence pitch just has so much conflict and so much emotion in it. It's like confesses, passionate, now vegan, refuses. Like the words are just so strong. It's just such a great pitch. You get so much from that one sentence. There, you know, two opposing viewpoints, like you said, progression versus tradition, the meat eaters and the vegans. Yeah. It's just,
well,
it's
thank
great.
You.
So
thank you for fucking choosing. I'm
we did choose it. The entire judging panel. We'll feature some of those other judges in later episodes, but I mean, about the experience, you guys talked about your roles a little bit, you know, producers and directors and something about soup earlier, but, what would you each say was your greatest contribution or what were some of the difficulties you ran into on set? And anyone can answer. I don't really have an order here. I'll just pick somebody random. How about Kevin? You tell me because you're the director. Difficulties on set.
Greatest contribution. I don't know really how to attack that. Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, I came onto the project kind of late. I know that Don had gone through a series of stops and starts trying to get this made. And,
yeah, for about 6 years.
And it just sort of like, you know, it was one of those things where it was like right place, right time. I think that I was think I was on like some sort of freelance stint editing in the Funny or Die office, and just like, you know, Darren and I are buds. I would come and bother him at his office from time to time and stop him from doing his actual real job that people expect him to do. Just one of those dudes who kind of like fucked around the office and ate the snacks. And yeah, one of those days he just told me that he was working on this short and let me take a look at it. And as soon as I looked at it, it was like, you know, this sounded like my family. Like I have a pretty mixed family, but like the, on my dad's side, very heavily Italian American. They all more or less at one time, we all more or less lived in the area where it, like, it doesn't, there's no slug line in the script that says it takes place in any particular location. But if you read the script, which obviously you did, you know where it takes place. It takes place in the tri-state area. You know, Don might say Jersey. I would say maybe Queens or Staten Island or something.
And I'm in Philly here, so it's the same.
Yeah, and it's all, it's all the same thing. And so, like,
Delco, whatever.
That was the first thing. Like, you know it. You know that rhythm when you see it. And so, for me, I just got super excited because it had that extra layer of, like, yeah, the story was really good. It was really, really funny. But, like, you can kind of get into this thing sometimes, especially with short films, where, like, either through, you know, an issue of, like, writing skill or the amount of time that you have to spend on the page, but, like, it's hard to differentiate characters from one another, and it's, like, all the characters were super clear, the voice of the piece was super clear, the sort of whole, like, environment, the milieu that this is supposed to take place in. It, like, I was so stoked that it was like, oh man, get to the, like, so I don't know how much I contributed to that, but that was something that, that was the first thing that I really connected with, was like, this feels like my family. I have yet to make something that I would be like fully proud to show them. Here we are. Yeah, I think it, in that regard, turned out really well.
But it's, like, hard to say, like, what you could – I think it's, like, hard to say what you contributed, you know, because it's, like – there's kind of, like, a almost embarrassment. Be like, I think I contributed this. But, like, I think we could all tell you what Kevin contributed. I could tell you what Darren did. I could tell you what Nate did. And it was calming me the fuck down, adding structure, money. It was, like – setting everything up, like, I don't know how to do any of this line producing, like, everything. Like, our camera broke down the first couple hours of filming. Wow. Like, and I lost my mind.
That was fun.
And they had another camera in like 2 hours. It was bonkers. Great. Like, we used Darren's house. Like, you could see the back of it right now has some of that charm in there. Before he moved in, you know, like, we were looking for a location and Darren was like, what if, like, I'm moving into this place, and then there's like an old Italian lady getting rid of her stuff like down the block, right?
Oh, and, like, my God,
so
it's like,
so everyone contributed so much. Like, I could.
Do you think that sense of the culture permeated like throughout the entire cast and crew? Like, did everyone kind of get like that East Coast tri-state kind of?
Yeah, because Gabris and Antonucci are from Long Island, and so they got it immediately, and yeah, Mary is just the best actress. She's just the funniest, best actress, and was down. And Andrew's character, my boyfriend in it, he's so, you don't need the juxtaposition. It was like, you don't need another heavy Jersey accent, you know, or Long Island or Philly accent in there. It's like, you need that voice of reason that just kind of peppers that.
Yeah, he's all polished.
You know, I was like, oh, he's probably from like San Francisco and he came to New York. And you know what I mean? Like, in my head, I was like, you know, he's probably working in, you know, a certain area here and he's away from his family and he doesn't get along with them. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that wasn't on the page too. Sorry, I keep talking.
No, go for it. And anyone can jump in whenever. I've never had four guests.
It's the first
podcast I've ever done. It's the third episode. So it's like, oh, let's have four guests. So let's go. But,
you know what I mean? Like, go ahead. Go ahead, Kevin.
Go ahead. Kevin, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, on the...
That's what I contributed to the project. Just say, Kevin, go ahead.
Just say, Kevin, go ahead.
The thing I did.
You did. Yeah, I mean, that is definitely part of the job. That's that you basically did. What you did really well. No, I just wanted to say, like, Don brought up the fact that our camera broke on that first day and, like, how intense that was. And, like, you know, I think the total running time in the movie ended up being around 14 minutes with credits. That script initially was like 20 pages.
Yeah.
And by the time we shot, it was like 18 pages. And so like, that's just, it was just big, a big lift each day just to like make sure that we're getting all of that dialogue. And that was like, it was one of those situations where you could easily freak an entire crew out. You can shut down production. You could do whatever. And we found a way to do it. And I just wanted to say like, sort of it, this project had a kind of momentum that you don't always find where it's just like you asked about the crew. Did they get the voice, like the East Coast vibe? I don't know about that, but they definitely got the vibe that I feel like this set had, which is like, we all knew we were trying to make something really good. Like, and that's not always the case, especially when you're working on, you know, not to trash any other kind of content, but like, you know, when you're doing something just for whatever, for a job. And then, you know, when you're working on something like, oh, this has the potential to be really good. And it just sort of like caught that momentum. Like, I don't know. I know Dom was freaking out about the camera. I freaked out for about 5 minutes. And then you settle into it. And it's like, no, we're going to figure this out. And sort of like how there, I don't know the name of it, but I, Darren, I know you know what I'm talking about. We tagged this specifically where it's like,
yeah, there was like a family like vibe, a I think, on the set.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the, I think the thing that happened with the camera, there was a version of the camera breaking down that happened a handful of times in pre-production, and we handled it the same way. We always figured out, I mean, I won't go into it, but there are so many things that would happen along the way as we were trying to put this thing together that we were like, oh no, this could ruin the entire thing. And then we figure out a way around it. What's that?
You could go into it.
Just like people coming onto the project and then like, oh, I got another gig, I got a bail, or like gear, or just the budget. Mm-hmm. We had to figure, I mean, figuring out how to make it work on a small budget is tough. But we wanted to really do it right. So we wanted to give it what it needed. But we always got into the situation where we would find a way to solve the problem and then take a step back and be like, oh, we're actually better off now than we were before this problem happened. And that kept happening. And so I think there was one last one of those false starts. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was like a DP or something where we were like, we had a DP initially that we thought of that dropped. And it was like,
is that a thing couple... with DPs? Because I had a DP drop on a project.
I think it's a thing because, at least the people that the sort of world that we were operating in was like DPs who they do the trade off of like they'll do short film or kind of like what Kevin was talking about. It's like they'll do commercials for the money and then the stuff they really want to do
comes along and
they can't. Or like we could never afford to pay these people what they're actually worth. So they do it for fun the same way we were doing it mostly. And so I think there's a lot of situations where it's like, I can't say no to this money. I got rent.
Right.
Not that they were doing it for free for us, but
yeah, on the DP.
But then we found, though,
sorry, you finish. Let's circle back eventually to DP.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, just anyway, then we found Kenji, who was like incredible. And so I think we always ended up kind of like in a better position. And we decided at that point, we were like, let's not worry about getting necessarily like the right pieces on paper one by one. Let's like get that vibe on set. I think that was on purpose. Like we wanted to assemble the team that was all there kind of for the right reasons, and understood the trade-offs and understood what we were doing, and we pulled it off really well. I think
I've been on so many sets and people were so kind, and I've been on so many shitty sets too, like as an actor, and like the vibe of just like fear and like angst and having a weird director or whatever it's going on. And it's just like they said, they built something. So if there was problems, it just, there was this momentum behind them. It was just too many good people at their jobs to kind of figure shit out.
Everyone I was so shocked. Good.
It took so long to make this thing. And I was just like, why do we have the best people here? Right. Like, this is insane to me. It's like, I waited 7 years to get the best people, like production, everybody. It was insane. Nate was like,
Nate, were you a big part of that? Or did you,
and I was like, why is this guy being so nice to us? Like, Nate's doing all these tedious fucking things. Like, what is he doing?
Well, that was when we decided that that's what we're going to do it, my first move was to get Nate on board because Nate was the person that could actually implement this plan and make all of that actually happen. Where he knew all the crew, he knew everyone. I mean, between the four of us, I think we ended up with like assembling all of the people that wanted that same kind of thing. And Nate came on to be like, yes, I know how to actually make this work.
Bonkers.
Nate really helped crew up a lot.
Crew up for the film. Line producing, the Zen Master. There were times when I think a good way to describe how Nate and I work together is at the times of most crisis that as a producer, you don't necessarily want everyone to know that there's a problem. I would be like trying my hardest not to show how freaked out I was. And like a lot of times the best move to do is sit back and let things keep happening rather than put a stop to something. And sometimes it's hard to do that. The best way to describe it is like, I'm the guy who's like sitting there fidgeting, like, oh God, I hope this works out. I hope this works out. And Nate's just, and I look over across the room and Nate is literally meditating.
Really? Oh, that's hysterical.
And then I was just like, oh, okay. Maybe everything's
fine. Meditating. Do you have like legs crossed on the floor? No, exactly. On set, or?
It makes sense though, because it's like, I'd be like, hey, Nate sitting there being like, yo, this everything isn't a problem. I put out fires. Like, I know
everything with your mind.
Dude's a fucking EMT. Like, I was like, why is this guy never panicking? He's just like always doing things cool, calm, and collectively. Always just giving beautiful stuff to the set. And no, I'm just like, what the? Darren undersold this dude, man. I was like, this guy's a fucking ninja.
Nate, do you regularly meditate?
None of this is true. I was actually
I've gotten into meditation recently, so I wasn't sure.
On set, I felt like
I forgot you were sick
that whole time. So I was just, oh my God, yeah, I looked sick. Like, so I was like in peace, like, but I was just had zero energy, and that was the move. Yeah.
It helps.
We need it helps.
You could have played that up. I would have believed so. That's hysterical.
You did meditate.
I meditate quite a lot. Yeah.
You do meditate.
It's a big part of my life, but not that day. It just looked like I was.
I knew that you.
It looked like I was meditating because I was just inside, just praying to God that I had some Dayquil. This was pre-COVID, by the way. Yeah, like, you could have a case of the sniffles on set, and it wasn't the end of the world. Yeah. Just by the way, I wasn't putting anyone at risk.
That is Nate's mentality on set in general, though, is he'll tell you that everything's fine and then prove it to you.
Yeah.
Which was hugely helpful. And I think we did. We got all the people that worked on this were like people who anytime a problem came up, like this paled in comparison to the worst problem they'd experienced. Like, there's just a very experienced cast and crew that have all rolled with so much worse punches than anything we had to deal with, because they've been doing it for long enough and they are good at what they do. And so nothing kind of freaked anyone out at any point for real.
Yeah. And speaking of COVID, we're talking a little bit about this before we actually started recording, but how has the festival circuit been and the reception been to Sunday Dinner amid this weird kind of 2020 environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten into more festivals than I thought it would get into, which was cool to see. And we won an audience award at a festival that I really loved, which is, I've been trying to watch a lot. I've been trying to virtually experience these festivals. I'm very sad because I've never been to a film festival before. This is the first film I've put out into the circuit, so I was really looking forward to meeting some other people and just kind of Darren and I had, I mean, how many planes did we have ready to go? I mean, we had a whole little circuit.
Yeah, lost a
we
bunch of plane money.
Lost a bunch of plane money. well, yeah, we were going to make a little tour of it because we got into a couple back-to-backs like in North Carolina and to Cleveland, and we were going to do a little zippity-doo-dah with that. But that all got canceled. So it's been sad. I don't know. It's not the same, obviously, I guess. Like, it's just like you're by yourself. Mm. You're kind of plugging in. You're watching a bunch. It's cool to see other people's work. It's cool to see, like, the different types of short films that get into these festivals and how many short films, like, how many people are making content is both, like, inspiring. Like, wow, a lot of people are making some, like, really good-looking stuff. And then, you know, it's been up and down, I'd say. I don't know how everybody else's experience. I've been trying to attend, quote unquote, virtually attend a lot of these.
Yeah, same.
So.
Yeah, it's been, I was telling Tom before we started recording, like, I think the upside, the biggest upside is the same as the upside that it is to the audience in a lot of cases where, like, a lot of people here in LA would not be able to attend our festival screening in Cleveland when we get into Cleveland. So it's cool that you can say, like, hey, we got into this festival and you can actually see it without having to be there. And you yourself can see it if you can't be there.
If they're not so geolocated.
That's been nice.
Some are geolocated. So it's like,
Cleveland was a bad example.
Cleveland was a bad example.
Yeah. but yeah. It's also, I would say, just because I'm particularly interested in this, spending a lot of time working in digital content, I am very interested in seeing what's becoming a more normal and sort of future set of tools for filmmakers and festivals and
online distribution.
Yeah, online distribution and seeing how that is getting accelerated in a very exciting way.
Yeah. I mean, we're super interested in that at the Film Fund too, obviously. I mean, we really like, I talked about this maybe last time, Short of the Week kind of has a philosophy called Everywhere All at Once, where they want you to post online immediately. You know, with the Film Fund, we give you guys a year. With COVID, it's been a little more lax, but a year to do an in-person festival circuit, and then it does go on the website. But it is super interesting to see how you can open up to other audiences online for sure, especially with short form content, because you know, there's not really an ROI there that I know of too well. But
I think what Kevin and I were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, COVID sucks.
The only shit that Kevin and I talked about this a little bit was just like not being able to like sit in the theater.
Yeah,
like,
man.
That experience of like here. Yeah. I still, it's been over a year now. I haven't been with other people watching this, minus maybe these guys when we were editing it, but I've never been in like a theater with everybody like watching this and just kind of feeling like, I don't know where the laughs are.
You're never going to replace
it.
Just never going to replace that feeling a bunch of people.
And it's an essential filmmaking tool. As exciting as all of the online stuff. And, like, credit to all of these people who, like these festivals were supposed to start in March.
Yeah, it's been great.
Some as early as the end of February. And the fact that they, like, built an infrastructure and got this off the ground, in so many cases with, like, you know, flying colors, it's really remarkable. And not just, like, you know, it never felt scrappy. It never felt like a second option. It always felt like, you know, as sort of polished as they could possibly make it. But that said, like, yeah, man, I didn't realize until the day that we premiered online for the first time in our first virtual festival how sad I was about that. Like, it's gratifying to stand in the back of a dark room and watch people watch your stuff, not just for like, oh, man, this feels good to see all my hard work, but like how much you learn doing that. Cause like, you know, I'm sure that listeners to this podcast know this very well, but like generally an audience isn't supposed to think about shit like this, but like every single shot, every single cut, every single eye look or whatever, we labor over this stuff. It's all precision designed to elicit a very specific series of reactions in a very specific order. And the only way to know for sure if that's working or if you're totally off is to watch people watch it. And it's just like as exciting as this new, especially with comedy. I mean, you hear stories about like, you know, people like Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow or whatever, they'll literally like record an audio track of an audience watching their movie, and then they'll sync it up with the movie later to be like, oh, this laugh worked here, but there's a big gap here. We got to do something. And, you know, I personally am not quite as anal, but like you learn so much.
Mel Brooks used to sit in the back of the theater and record tally marks of every single laugh.
I would do that on my sketches. Really? I did not know that. I would write in live sketch when me and my buddy were doing this Billy Joel sketch show. We'd record it and go through it, man. Fine tooth comb, man. Like we'd go through it and be like, big checks for big laughs, little checks for kind of giggles, you know, big X's for like that fucking blue. And then we'd do that like a couple times to see like, was it the audience? Was it the, you know, environment? Was it us? Was it, you know, we set an inflection here. Like you can get that meticulous with things on stage. And I saw it's digitally even more so. You can get even more meticulous because you can adjust stuff.
Especially with a piece like this where like it's not a sketch. It's not like, obviously it's a comedy, but the intention was never like, you know, a laugh every 5 seconds or whatever. Yeah. The intention is like balance the laughs. All of that humor comes from character. There's one character who like explicitly tells jokes. Otherwise, all of the humor comes from the character. And so you're building character. Like you have to paint a picture for the audience of who that character is in order to understand why what they're saying is funny. And then on top of that, you're dealing with like, you know, the meat of the movie, no pun intended, is a dramatic storyline.
Wow. Really should have intended that.
Should have taken that one, dude. Jesus. Yeah.
But yeah, you want to string people along this story and you want to time things out so that they are getting all the information that they need, be it a laugh or a very important piece of exposition or whatever, like a dramatic breadcrumb in that storyline. And so, I think that we missed out, but we got to sort of pioneer this new thing that I think in a lot of ways is going to become more the norm.
I still want to figure out a way to do it.
You went for a test drive.
I still want to figure out a way to maybe like screen this somewhere for like family and friends eventually.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, we did that with, I didn't really have anything to do with it, so I'm using the we very, very literally there, but Americano, the first film we funded, I guess I should say they did a friends and family screening in Philly that was private, and they just rented out a theater, and I was there as, you know, representing the film fund, but I mean, they got a great showing. It was just amazing to be there for that. So, I mean, I could definitely see that.
Drive-in.
Drive-in.
And I would love to come. So, maybe. Please. Oh, drive-in could be cool. Yeah. That'd be awesome. So, yeah, it sucks, you know, the in-person experiences in there, but it seems like there are some upsides in terms of flexibility and distribution and pioneering new technology. So I guess that is one of the rewarding parts of the experience. So Sunday dinner, I mean, I'm just looking at my script here from our wonderful producer Tom. He's telling me to ask where it has played, but the list is pretty long. I'm on the website here. I could rattle it off. So did it premiere at
Cleveland, I believe.
Cleveland, yeah, I think so. Right. Oh God, I'm.
Do you want me to, I have a list here. If you want me to.
Do you have a list? Yeah, that would be
of
great.
Of course, Darren has the list ready. Than me,
let me
you're,
just.
You're more
pull
prepared
up
than
spreadsheet.
I am.
Spreadsheet. it's not as ready as I thought. Okay. We've screened. This is not in order, but we've screened at Brooklyn Film Festival, Ashland Independent Film Festival. That's where we won the Audience Award for Best Short. Flickers, Rhode Island International Film Festival, Cleveland International Film Festival, Los Angeles Comedy Festival. I don't think the screening has actually happened there
yet.
Yeah,
it's been weird.
Long Island International Film Expo. Yeah. We wanted to do Montclair Film Festival,
Jersey.
Pittsburgh Shorts and Script Competition. That was just last week. Mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Film Festival, Cordillera International Film Festival, Burbank International Film Festival, and it was accepted to River Run, but they canceled their festival. There was another cancellation in here somewhere.
It was a good chunk, though.
I believe, there's also some, I think, that are not public yet that have been postponed, and we have to wait until we can publicly say.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult with COVID and all that. But where can we currently watch it right now?
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
It pops up in
get it up on that film phone website. Yeah. Man. We want to see it.
It's still just in the festival. I think now is a good time actually to regroup on that and figure that out, because I think we're in the clear now with festivals that require that
premiere status.
Not be like available online. That's been, I think, one of the more frustrating aspects of dealing with the sort of virtual festival circuit, is the one thing that not every festival has sort of caught up to is, in this new world, it changes what maybe should or shouldn't be acceptable. So I think a lot of festivals stuck to their guns on this can't already exist and be distributed in some way, whereas we're in a different world. So like, we're all like, if you're screening it virtually and it's up for like, it's no longer that different of a thing to be screened, for distribution on the internet versus like screened physically in a theater. It's a different thing. So I think a lot of festivals were very accommodating and some were not.
Yeah. By the way,
and that's their decision.
Speaking of contributions majorly to the film, a lot of that has come in post with Darren. He has been a mastermind of keeping track of all the submission stuff, all the deadlines, everything required, putting the forms in. I mean, it was kind of, he just headed that up, and it's unbelievable the amount of work that it's taken. And Darren's like the only one of us, right, with like an actual full-time job. Like a 40-hour-a-week job, I believe.
Yeah. And he's doing,
and then basically, he's the one that's just taking.
And then like apologizes sometimes, like, sorry.
Yeah. Oh my God, you guys! It's like I didn't get back to you like 15 minutes. It's like, dude, yeah, you're the only one actually working, and then taking on this whole thing.
Oh man, I missed a couple of deadlines. I felt awful.
No, not at all. Like,
don't give a shit.
Yeah, you, it's been unreal.
Yeah, the organization's bonkers. I'm so unorganized.
Mm-hmm. So TBD on where we can currently watch. Well, nowhere. And not TBD, but we can't watch it anywhere right now, but TBD on where we can watch it in the near future.
Yes.
It'll be out there soon.
Excited to figure that
out. It'll be out there soon. We'll figure it out soon. For sure.
What advice would you guys give other filmmakers who may be just starting out, whether it could be production tip, you know, festival, post coordination, that kind of stuff, writing, Don, like anybody can jump in.
Well, I would say like, just go for it. Don't you don't need to polish it too hard right now. I think the standards have jumped so high, but I think that sometimes my kind of perfectionism held me back in certain regards. And then also find people that are like-minded and have the same passions as you, and maybe compliment you in different ways. That takes reciprocity. That takes time. That takes empathy, and not selfishness. Like you have to really, we're blessed with the kind of being through the UCB thing, because we got to learn to work with other people and see the value of the group, over the individual. So, writing wise, it's like, you know, it's fucking hard. Write what you think is funny. Try to find other people that think it's good too. And then just try to make it like the best you can. The first couple are going to suck. And sometimes the next couple are going to suck too. But yeah, it's random little tidbits in there. The technical front, I have no idea. No clue. Don't have your camera break. I don't know.
That's probably a good one. Yeah,
don't have your camera break. Don Finelli, 2020.
Dave shooting. We'll make that a nice little infographic.
Yeah, please make that a
promo
meme
on the podcast.
How to not have your camera break. Yeah. Step one.
Don't have it break.
I guess I have a piece of advice sort of related to that. I mean, like, I guess I would boil it down to, like, from a directing standpoint, and a DP standpoint to a certain extent, but mostly directing, have a very specific plan. Know exactly why you are putting the camera down for a particular shot every single time. Not just so that you can show up and execute the plan that you made on paper, but for situations exactly like that, where a camera breaks. So like, if you go in and you're kind of just going to, you go, oh, I know what the scene is, and I need a shot on her and a shot on him, and then the camera breaks, and you're a lot more likely to scramble and not know what to do and to make other people uncomfortable as a director. Like, there's nothing worse than standing around on a set watching a director have a panic attack. Like, it just, even if it's not your problem to deal with, it's just uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to feel like you're in shaky hands and to feel like there's, even on an unconscious level, you make it sort of weird for other people to do their work. And that's ultimately your job. It's create an environment where it is, you know, the most conducive to other people doing their best work as possible. So show up with a plan and know why you have that plan, so that then when shit hits the fan, you go, okay, well, I have these 12 shots planned. We can only do 6 of them, but I know how to combo these shots. I know how to sort of be more efficient with my coverage because I know whatever the reason, emotional reason, exposition, whatever, I've already done the homework to know what I'm accomplishing by each shot. So yeah, throw out the shot list. We can figure this out now.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Always good to have. I mean, that's a good segue into asking the producers some questions on tips, you know, planning and organizing. What do you guys
meditating.
Have for
meditating?
That's a life tip.
Taking Dayquil in the corner.
I'm with you, baby. Every morning, yeah. I'm with you.
I would say everything is about the people. Find the best people to work with. And follow Don's advice about empathy and about reciprocity and finding this is a collaborative art form. The other piece of advice is that it is an art form. Don't lose sight of that. Like, you should be making moves as the artist version of yourself about what you want to actually put out into the world when this is all done, as opposed to just like career lily pads, which is, I think, a very easy trap to fall into of like, what's the next thing I need to do to get to the step I need to in my career? Don't lose sight of what this is all about, and you should know why you're doing this in the first place and why you're doing this project in the first place, and not lose sight of that. I think being kind of tunnel vision about that has always been really helpful to me, is to know like, this is why I care about this project. This is why this needs to happen. And so that needs to be realized. And so that can't be compromised. And these are the people that are going to help make that happen. So I always think just like staying true to that and meeting the people that will think in a similar way and care about those things has led me to be able to be involved in really great work, and I'm grateful for that. I think it's less nuts and bolts. I think also don't be afraid to fail and put out stuff that's bad. And then you learn a lot from that, way more from that than the successes that you say, oh, great, I don't have to
do anything differently.
Yes, I've definitely dealt with that. I mean, put out bad stuff. It's going to happen. Just do it. Just get your reps in.
You're not the only one putting out bad stuff.
When you get the opportunity to make something that is so much harder and you need to be so good, you're going to need the skills that you built from all of the things that you put out that suck. Yeah. So if you didn't do that, you're screwed now, because this was your shot at the thing you really wanted to make.
Not only that, you have to learn how to use the things that you sucked at while things are, because there's problems all the time. There's just going to be problems all over the place. And it's like learning how to use them in the best ways. And you have to, that's a skill that you need to develop, is to like, the, you know, lemons out of lemonade bullshit, but it's true.
Yeah. I'm so proud of how this short turned out. Yeah, I'm so proud of how the short turned out. And there are maybe 20 different things that like I could point to other projects that I or someone else has worked on that sucked, but are the reason why we were able to get through a problem and make this what it was.
Mm-hmm. I love all of that. Yeah, I mean, fail fast, fail often is what they say, right? Nate, do you have anything to add there?
No, we're all in meditation, which is producing is, you know, it's an all encompassing word, but it's definitely a job in human resources, and you need to be able to understand people, and you need to be able to communicate effectively with people. Otherwise, everything's kind of going to fall apart. I mean, honestly. You shouldn't be building, you're building a team, right? And you shouldn't be just ever building a team based on availability. As much as Kevin talks about laying down the camera with an intention and a plan for each shot and why he's doing that. A good producer, I think, should have a plan of why they're hiring this person and why they think that they would make a good connection. Like Kevin and Kenji, the DP, we put them together and they're continuing to work together and they really bonded on that film. It was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was very purposeful. It's like, okay, I think this person and this person, you know, if we add that together, it's going to create something new. Or I know this person's vibe is going to jive with that. And it's also placing the person in a very specific, intentioned way. So that, like, you should strive for being on set and having somebody come visit you as a producer. And you should want them to ask you, like, what do you do? What do you actually do? You seem to just sit there on your computer. Somebody will come ask you a question. Obviously, sometimes the camera will break, but it's like, all right, I've got four guys who I know have that similar camera. It's like, it's Saturday, but like, I'll just give them a call. It's not a big deal. I've done it before, kind of thing. So yeah, that's going to happen. But like, you should build the little ship, you know, the little paper ship, and just let it sail. That's your job. Like, most of your work should already be done by the time you get that first shot. And you should be kind of confident in that going forward, that all that work has been done in pre-production, and then you're able to have the time and the mental capacity at that point to come, to have people come to you with issues, because you know everything else is going smoothly, or you know it's not all on you because you've set up a team around you to help ensure that they have, you know, that they're going to help you out. It's everybody's all in. So, because of course it's going to be stressful if it's just you, but yeah, build that team around you.
I'm hearing from all of you, plan, fail, and just go forward with confidence, basically, in a nutshell.
And people.
Yeah. I think a lot of people also like promise a lot of things. Like, don't be the person that just kind of promises more than, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew. I've been through years of that this project, where a lot of people promising stuff and it falls through, and I didn't lose faith in humanity at all, but it was also like, oh, that's a big part of this industry. You just learn, like, especially when you come out to Los Angeles, a lot of people talk a lot of stuff and they actually do want to do stuff. It's just sometimes you can't. And I think it's just best always to be upfront with people, to be like, hey, I thought I could do this thing and it didn't fall through. I always have more respect for that, for people that are just kind of more upfront with stuff, a little bit more down to earth. It's a weird ass business. It's a weird ass business with trying to protect your egos and images and all that stuff. So I was really blessed with this casting crew. It all just kind of came together. I was very happy to wait 6 years to make this thing.
What do you guys all have in store for the future?
Gonna go fight some fires, honestly.
I want to be on Nate's set. That's what I want. Just
happy to have a future thanks to all these fires not getting out of control.
Jesus. I don't know. Everyone's like, right? I mean, I'm still writing. I sold a movie to Nickelodeon last year with my wife, and that was kind of on the short list.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thanks.
Congrats.
And then we don't know if that's going to be made now, but we continue to work together and pitch movies and stuff like that in that kind of four quadrant realm, and then auditioning when I can. And I'm working on a pilot, almost done with this. I finished the first draft of the pilot for this Sunday dinner film, which
You owe us a draft.
I owe you guys a draft. It's I'm working on this one scene.
The feature version are we talking about?
What's that?
Are you talking about the feature version?
I'm talking about a 30-minute version.
Okay. Oh, you said pilot.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm interested to see. I'm really digging it, and it's gone through a lot of change. I put a lot of thought and stuff into it over this COVID times, but I also have a 1.5-year-old that screams at it, so take some time to rein her in. It's been tough to balance all this stuff, especially with a lot of the uncertainties of this world. So it's, you got to have to keep looking forward to stuff, but this has been a rough year for sure. I'm sure for a lot of folks.
Yeah, definitely a crazy year.
That's me though.
Wait.
Anybody else want to go on new projects or persevering?
Yeah, perseverance.
We'll wrap it up here.
Fuck. Go ahead, Kevin. I think, you know, I'm doing what a lot of people are doing and trying to put as many irons in the fire now as possible. Like, it's very hard to start and complete. There's a small window of the kind of project you can start and complete from beginning to end in these conditions, and people are doing it, and props to them as long as they're doing it safely. But I don't think most of the projects that we want to do, at least that I want to do, don't fit into that category. So I have one movie I was supposed to shoot in April. It's supposed to be my first feature. We think that we're going to shoot it quarter one of 2021, but who knows? I'm no longer like banking on a specific date on the calendar, but just kind of, it's been really helpful these past, whatever, 7-8 months to get back into the mindset of making things happen no matter what, and not relying so much on very specific details. Not unlike the way that we put this project together, honestly. Knowing that if the work is good, it's going to happen one way or the other, whether it happens on March 1st or June 20th or whatever next year. Just working on that movie and then trying to get as many feature projects off the ground as possible, pitching and writing and all that.
I'm brewing home kombucha.
Darren, are you pretty much just slogging away at the day job?
It's really good.
I just got into kombucha
quality,
awesome.
I think.
Oh, man.
And so you never know. Maybe
I've been drinking kombucha this whole time.
Maybe something will come of that. Who knows?
Oh, man.
All right.
I've had a project that has started and is going to finish during COVID. And it if I do say so myself, done very safely. but that happened. It's incredibly hard. I mentioned before I work at Funny or Die, and Funny or Die has been, I can't take credit for it, but I think has been very good at figuring out how to still do some version of what we do, and with a very focused eye towards safety during this time. They've worked really hard to come up with like really, really strict COVID protocols, and so we've done a few things here and there, and I wrote a web series that was shot all in a like totally COVID safe studio at our offices a month ago, and that's in post now, and so that'll come out in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's so exciting. That'll be through Funny
or Die. Yeah.
Very cool. All right, guys, I want to thank you each for taking the time to come on our third ever episode. I think this was a great one. Just, you know, for all the listeners out there, we do have a lot of listeners, even though this is only the third episode for sure. I think we had like 20 on the there last one, but we're getting there.
24.
We do have, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
If we all listen right now while we're talking. So we do have contests currently open. Those contests close on December 8th. You can win things like up to $10,000 in cash money for your film. You can use that for whatever the hell you want. Buy a new camera in case it breaks, hire an editor, whatever. Kitsplit gift cards, Adobe Creative Cloud subscriptions to help edit your film. We have some sponsors like Maestro Filmworks sponsoring post-production services like color grading. A lot of awesome stuff, so be sure to check that out. And if you're listening at a later date and it's past December 8th, go to thefilmfund.co/contests. We always have the up-to-date information there. You can also check out our blog at thefilmfund.co/blog, filled with great filmmaking and producing tips. So check that out and sign up for our newsletter, because you will be notified of things like this podcast so we can grow the listener subscriber base and keep doing awesome interviews and media opportunities like this. Next week, we have Avi Seton, who is a judge of the Film Fund, so that'll be a super interesting perspective. He's also worked at Google and has some really interesting production insight. He's a filmmaker as well, so can't wait for that episode. Guys, I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
And remember to tune in every Friday. Yeah, thank you. Anyone want to add anything else besides homemade kombucha?
Thank you, Film Fun. You want that?
Thank you, Film Fun.
Thank you, Film Fun.
Obviously, like the color scheme. Right,
I mean, thank you for existing.
Yeah. Could not have made this.
You got it.
So thank you.
This was it. So we really appreciate it, Tom.
Absolutely. Happy to help, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take care.
Happy Thanksgiving.
See ya. Thank you.